Hello, world-class listeners. Before we start today's show, we wanted to let you know that world-class host and former U.S. ambassador to Russia, Michael McFaul, has a new book called From Cold War to Hot Peace, An American Ambassador in Putin's Russia. In his book, McFaul offers a revelatory inside account of U.S.-Russia relations from 1989 to the present. The book is now available on Amazon or wherever you buy your books. Again, it's called From Cold War to Hot Peace.
You're listening to World Class from the Freeman Spogli Institute for International Studies at Stanford University. We bring expertise on international affairs from Stanford's campus straight to you. I'm Larry Diamond, Senior Fellow at FSI and at the Hoover Institution. Cambodia has never been a democracy, but during the 1990s and early 2000s, it did have political pluralism, some degree of electoral competition, and some space for civil society. Over the past two decades, even these limited checks on authoritarianism have been under increasing assault. Prime Minister Hun Sen, who has been in power since 1985, has reportedly amassed a family fortune of more than $200 million, possibly much more, while establishing an increasingly dictatorial regime that has imprisoned his chief political opponents or sent them into exile. The press and civil society have been under similar brutal pressure, and a number of critics have been assassinated. In September 2017, the last remaining opposition leader of any significance, Kem Sokha, who heads the Cambodia National Rescue Party, was arrested, and the party, the only opposition party with a national following, was disbanded. The following month, the party's deputy leader, Mu Sokua, went into exile after being alerted of her imminent arrest. Mu Sokua was sent abroad to study in 1972 and later lost her parents in the Cambodian genocide. She returned to Cambodia in 1989 to work on human rights and refugee issues, and she has been a human rights advocate ever since. She's also held several prominent positions in government since entering politics in 1998. In 2014, she and six other opposition leaders were imprisoned for leading an insurrectionist movement, or an alleged insurrectionist movement, after a popular protest turned violent. From exile, she is currently campaigning for international sanctions against the Hun Sen regime, while remaining legally a member of parliament, I gather. Mu Sokua, welcome to the show, and thank you for taking the time to talk with us.
Thank you very much. I'm very pleased to be here, Professor Diamond.
So let me begin by asking you the most obvious question. Hun Sen has been in office for 33 years. He's now one of the longest serving leaders of government in the world. And obviously no leader of government that's been in power for 33 years would be even faintly democratic. You've served in the assembly and as a member of, as a minister of women's affairs, of veterans affairs for many years. You've watched the political situation evolve, I think, in a very worrisome way. How would you describe the changes that Cambodia has undergone politically in this time?
I have to put Cambodia in a very special place in Southeast Asia. Cambodia is usually known for the great temples of Angkor Wat. We have over 4 million visitors visit Angkor Wat every year. The great empire of Cambodia began then. However, Cambodia is also known for the genocide that was committed by the Khmer Rouge from 1975 to 1979, where more than 1 million of our people, including my parents, my relatives, around 40 of them, starved to death or were taken away because we were labeled as the ethnic Chinese or professionals or just wearing glasses, even that was a crime. But in 1993, the UN-sponsored elections gave us, gave the people of Cambodia, a hope and the choice to vote for change. And sure enough, the people of Cambodia, representing 99% of the voters, went out to vote at that time. It was then that the political arena in Cambodia started to change because more than one party got elected. In fact, my former party got elected.
The Samarinsi,
it was the Funsimpek, the Royalist Party, because people at that time wanted the return of Prince Sihanouk, or King Sihanouk. And then they voted for his son, Prince Ranarat. Then we had the real great opening with programs of human rights and democracy. We were involved in the reconstruction of Cambodia. We were holding peace walks. We were holding great debates on what to put in the new constitution, preparing for a new Cambodia. That gave the people of Cambodia, especially at the grassroots level, the first meaning of the word democracy, prachitapatai. To put in simple words, the word democracy, when I go to the countryside and I talk about, to the people, I usually say people. Prachia, Tapatai, lead. So that was in 1993.
It looked hopeful in terms of the possible emergence of democracy.
Yes, yes. And that was the seeds of democracy. I stress on that because that was 1993. Today we are in 2018. So 6 elections later, today, as of today, the National Election Commission in Cambodia just closed the registration for parties to register to participate in the 29 July election. Our party, the Cambodia National Rescue Party, lost its chance to register to vote. Not because we are not ready. To the contrary, we are so ready. Because we got the popular vote in 2013, we got 44% of the total of the vote. And in 2017, at the local elections, we got the 44% as well. But because of that, because of the popular vote, because the ruling party, Mr. Hun Sen, the prime minister, who has been in power for 35 years, is so afraid that if he lets the main opposition party, the only opposition party, our party, the CNRP, run and compete 2 months from now, Mr. Hun Sen will surely lose the election. So he started this scenario to eliminate CNRP, the main opposition in Cambodia. He did it by shutting 20 or so radio stations. He did it by shutting the only newspaper, English print newspaper, in the Cambodia Daily. He did it by putting in jail members of human rights organizations. And then finally, he did it by taking our president, Mr. Kamsokha, to court, arresting him while he is still protected by his parliamentary immunity. And then that was in September. In November, our party was dissolved.
November of last year.
2017. Mm-hmm. Myself and all the 117 members of the CNRP are forbidden by the Supreme Court to practice our political career for 5 years. And 55 members of parliament that be elected in 2013 to represent the people of Cambodia, 3 million voted for change. We also lost our seats in parliament. Our seats that we got through elections are were redistributed by the ruling party to smaller parties that had no, that won no seats in parliament. You can imagine what the situation in Cambodia is like. So we cannot run for election in 2018.
So let me first stress that you made these remarkable electoral showings in 2013 and 2017 in a context where the voting was not free and fair.
Correct.
So if there'd been a really level playing field without all the massive advantages of the ruling party and the prime minister, and without all the physical intimidation, is it fair to say that the Cambodian National Rescue Party probably would have won power 5 years ago?
Yes, we did. We were very, very certain that we won in 2013 because we, for sure, we know that 1.5 million voters at that time were disenfranchised. So if we talk about 1.5 million, at the time, we only need about 100,000 more votes. If those 1 million or so voters that were eligible and were allowed to register to vote, we would have won more than the majority. Again, in 2017, at the local elections, we won 44%, representing in real number, we had 5,007 local councillors, 5,007 from zero in 2002. That was the first time we had local elections. 2017, we moved to 5,007 local councillors. It's an amazing, amazing success for Democrats in Cambodia. And the people, I praise the people of Cambodia for being sharp, for knowing their rights, for from 1993, the first time they heard about democracy, for and then in 2003, every election, we, the opposition party, the Democrats in Cambodia, keep on gaining more votes.
So let me ask you this. Hun Sen has been in power now for, as we said, 33 years, since before the UN transitional authority tried to give birth to a new democratic system. And there clearly is, I was there about 6 years ago, obvious popular displeasure with Hun Sen and his very visible and massive corruption. Why is he able to survive in power? And what is the role of the international community in all this?
Before I answer that question, Professor Diamond, I would like to put in context the living conditions of the people of Cambodia so that people here understand why the people of Cambodia want change. If Mr. Hun Sen is such a great leader, why does he stay until for 35 years? Over 2 million Cambodians now are migrant workers in the neighboring countries. When we talk about migrant workers, we talk about the youth of a country, of a nation. When close to 2 million young Cambodians cannot find work in Cambodia, of course, they migrate. They go to find employment. But they are not talking about, we're not talking about skilled employment. We are talking about unskilled labor. We're talking about people who cannot even make enough living to survive making $2 a day. They can't in Cambodia, or $3 a day. They can't even find that. That's why they take the risk. They cross through the borders of Thailand, to Malaysia as well. Some of them are fishermen in the fishing boats of Thailand, and they go, and especially women and children go through the networks of human traffickers. Still, our people are so desperate in Cambodia that they go and drift away to the neighboring countries. On top of that, so only 30% of our farmland remain in the hands of our farmers. The rest of it was given, is a giving, given away by us land economic concessions to big companies, to Chinese companies, to Vietnamese companies, you name it, under the name of development for Cambodia. What actually is the land of our farmers. Our farmers have lost their land. When a farmer loses his land or her land, he or she loses the life. On top of that, our farmers are so much in debt. And all of that, we talk about corruption, all of that is because they, at the national level, the government at the national level, is not addressing the issues at the local level, because all the national budget is stuck more or less upstairs and in the hands of these corrupt officials, mainly the high-ranking officials. As you just said, Mr. Hun Sen owned, you say, $200 million? I would say billion.
Mm-hmm. And Cambodia, I've seen those estimates too.
Yes, Cambodia loses about $4 billion into illegal logging. Our forests are gone. And every day, these forests, these trees that are sanctuary years old are cut and taken away from the forests that belong to our indigenous communities and just moved next door to Vietnam and then moved forward toward China. That is worth $4 billion. Even our sand, the sand on the coast of Cambodia, is dredged and then sold to Singapore. We lost the national budget, million, about $700 million that are not counted for. And that's only from the sale of land or sand to Singapore. So
they're selling the country.
Cambodia is up for sale. Mm-hmm. But the point now is that we, the opposition party, the members of opposition party, the CNRP, myself as a member of parliament, when we were in Cambodia representing our people, we went straight to the farm of the people. We went straight to the river. We went straight to the coast to witness and to protect the rights of our people. And that's why the people are confident, trust the opposition party. And that's why together with our people, we are confident that with free and fair elections, Cambodia will be a better Cambodia through a rule of law rather than rule by law. We would get rid of corruption, and we will keep the national budget, increase the source of funding for national projects so that children, women can get the services that deserve. We can decrease the rate of infant and maternal mortality. We can increase the quality of education by increasing the salaries for our teachers, get them into training, into schools, and give our youth the quality of education so that they can compete with the youth and the neighboring countries.
This seems like the obvious preference of the Cambodian people. Clearly, if the opposition is winning so much of the vote, while the elections are so massively unfair. As I said, if there were fair elections, imagine how it would do. But Cambodia is not getting there. It's moving in reverse. And so let me ask you, what would you like to see the international community do? What role does it play, and what role should it play?
I begin with the United States. I take this opportunity to congratulate and to thank members of the U.S. Congress who have been very, very active in watching the development of democracy in Cambodia, mainly the death of democracy in Cambodia. Members of the House of the Congress at the House of Representatives and at the Senate level have put together bills to prevent, to impose sanctions on the high-ranking officials of from the government of Cambodia. I cite two bills. House Bill 5754 is to impose sanctions, visa sanctions, targeted sanctions on high-ranking officials of the government of Cambodia who have undermined democracy, meaning like even the prime minister or the senior members of the government of Cambodia who have been active, who have been involved in the dissolution of the opposition party or putting members of the civil society in jail or members of the Supreme Court of the judiciary that have been involved in preventing the opposition from running for election. There is another bill that is from the House, from the Senate, Bill S-2412. That bill is in to impose sanctions as well as the freezing of assets of influential members of the government. Those two bills are combined together we have sanctions as well as freezing of assets. That is, I don't think, is if it is not going to make Mr. Hun Sen turn and put Cambodia and democracy in Cambodia on track, we call for economic sanctions because the U.S. market for garments, for textile, give Cambodia tariff-free and quota-free that represent millions of dollars as well. It does put 700,000 factory workers in to work, but at the same time, it gives the leverage to the government to say to the international community and say, see, there is economic growth in Cambodia. We say, yes, economic growth, yes, trade, but it has to come under the same package as human rights protection and rule of law and democracy. We also would like to thank 45 members of the UN Human Rights Council, who those countries have a call on the government of Cambodia to put democracy back on track. It condemned the harsh measures that the government, Mr. Hun Sen, has taken against the opposition party. They call for the immediate release of Mr. Kamsoka, our president, the president of the opposition party, and the release of prisoners of conscience. They also support us in the call for free and fair elections. And as I said earlier, the opposition party just missed the date a couple hours ago. We are not able to register to vote because our party was dissolved by Mr. Hun Sen, the Prime Minister of Cambodia.
Well, let's hope that the members of Congress take that as the final prompt to adopt these targeted sanctions on the regime's leaders who have stolen so much of the wealth of the country and sent it abroad to safe haven. Nevertheless, it looks like the elections are going to go on as the shadow of democracy that they have been, but even more so. And Hun Sen continues with the warm embrace and support of the People's Republic of China. It looks China's rising. The U.S. influence in Asia is certainly not increasing. What gives you hope for the future of Cambodia?
The concrete actions we are taking is, first of all, as of today, we call for a nationwide boycott of the elections. Boycott. And I appeal at this moment to each and every one of citizens around the world who want to see democracy as not just for your own country or my country, but democracy in the, as a global meaning of democracy, to take action by writing or visiting or talking to politicians, members of the Congress or parliamentarians in your own country, to not accept the elections in Cambodia as free and fair, and after that, to not accept a government that is not, that is born out of a election that is not free and fair. We must put democracy back on track. China cannot give Cambodia democracy. China cannot protect the human rights of our people. Only we can, and we can do it. Why? Standing up, we can do it through this boycott, and we cannot give Mr. Hun Sen another second of his regime.
Finally, I understand you recently launched a new website. If you could tell our listeners a little bit about that and direct them to the URL.
Yes, we would like to ask you to join us. We have started a new movement called the Cambodia National Rescue Movement, calling for to support free and fair elections and democracy in Cambodia. You can go to and log into freecambodia.org and then join the movement.
Well, I hope our listeners will do that and that they will follow your noble and brave struggle to finally, after so many decades, achieve what is clearly the dream and the need of the Cambodian people, which is for a free and democratic state under a rule of law that will protect their rights. Mu Sokua, thank you so much for everything you have done to devote your life to this struggle, and for coming to visit Stanford University.
Thank you, Stanford University, for giving me a voice.
You've been listening to World Class from the Freeman Spogli Institute for International Studies at Stanford University. If you like this episode, please review us on iTunes. It helps other people find the show. And be sure to subscribe to stay up to date on what's happening in the world and why. Thank you all.